My name is Michelle. I'm 47. Today's date is March 11th, 2020, and I'm in Las Cruces, New Mexico with Harold Morris, my friend.
My name is Harold Morris. I'm 80 years old. I turn 80 February the 9th. Today's March 11th, 2020. We're in Las Cruces, New Mexico on the campus of NMSU. And my interview partner is Michelle.
So, Harold, do you remember when we first met?
We met in the post office in downtown Las Cruces. I forget what year it was.
It's been a while,
It's been a while, yes.
And I think every now and then we just kept running into each other, and it was always such a pleasure to have those moments. And you just sparked some great energy and some great conversation, and I always remember that. And a lot of time went by, and I didn't run into you, and I kind of got worried. And then I looked you up, and I remember I found you on the internet, and I found your number, and we reconnected recently. And it was kind of serendipitous because I heard about this StoryCorps, and I immediately thought of interviewing you because of your enthusiasm when any time we had conversations. So, and I was especially happy that you were in the military, because I know this is a Military Voices initiative, so I wanted to invite you here.
Well, I believe, from my experience, I was born in Crowley, Louisiana. I had a first cousin named L.C. Friend, who was in World War II, and he came back from there, and I was about 6 years old, but I remember seeing a picture of him in black and white, glossy, in a uniform, and I believe that's when I got the feeling that I wanted to be in a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the Boy Scouts when I was about 9 or 10 years old. And I went to Booker T. Washington School. We were segregated then.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go on a weekend camp out at Old Mesilla, and we were with the other Boy Scouts. And then when they integrated the schools, I still wanted to be a Boy Scout, so I asked the white guys where they met, and I joined with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, before I left the Booker T. Washington era, we went to climb the A Mountain here. And what's really interesting, I'm about 9 or 10 years old, and I didn't really have a knapsack. My mother had a purse. She had one of those cloth purses, and she made me about 2 bologna and cheese sandwiches, had an apple and an orange, and a mason jar of water. And that's what I carried. And my mother told me that I have sickle cell trait in my family. And I remember when I was climbing the mountain, we got about 3/4 of the way, and I kind of got winded. The other boys, they didn't really tease me, but they kind of looked at me with worry. And I wasn't thinking about the sickle cell business. I just wanted to show them that I could keep up. So I did make it to the top of the mountain.
That's great.
You have another question?
So how old were you when you joined the military?
Okay. I was 17 years old. My birthday is February the 9th, and I wanted to be with my friends, so we joined the Army Reserves. And we met, it was almost like the Boy Scouts. We met twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
We met for 2 hours at this building. We really didn't do much. It was kind of like a classroom thing. But then that summer, we went to Fort Polk, Louisiana. And I was we were in the 541st Engineer Company, which is out of World War II. It was a pipeline company. I worked in the mess hall, but the other guys, what they did, they laid out aluminum pipes. That's what they used in World War II to transport the water. And then the first week they laid the pipe, the second week they came back and took it up. And then we came back to Las Cruces. That was my first experience in the military.
And you stayed connected with those friends?
Most of them are gone now.
Mm-hmm.
There's Harley Pettis, who still lives here, and myself, but the other guys are gone.
What were some of the memories you have together when you were out there of things that you did together when you were stationed out there?
Well, we played football together at school. We were friends. Mm-hmm.
Was your family supportive about you joining the military as well?
My stepfather printed a newspaper. No, he died in 53. I just had my mother. So I guess my mother, she was resigned for me to do it because her nephew had been in the service. And I guess you could say she came up during World War II, so there was no opposition mm-hmm. to it. She signed for me. And of course, we didn't know the deal about you had to be, you know, had to have someone to sign. We just did it.
Mm-hmm. And you were there 5 years initially in the reserves?
Yes. When I signed the contract, it was an 8-year commitment. And that I heard the number, but that didn't mean anything. I'm 17 years mm-hmm. old. So I was a junior in high school. So I finished high school, and I came to college here for a year and a half. And then, well, I flunked out of college, and my mother was married to a service member at the time, and they were at Fort Hood, Texas. So my mother invited me to come live with them. So I joined the regular army. I was living in Temple, Texas. I went to the Marine Corps recruiting office. I wanted to be a Marine, but I failed the test, and I think it was a good thing because I did go to Vietnam, but had I gone as a Marine, it probably would have not have been so pleasant. So they sent me from Temple, Texas to Dallas. I went to the Army recruiting station. And in fact, I had gastritis, which I didn't know about it, but they sent me to Parkland Hospital in Dallas where President Kennedy was taken eventually. And I passed the examination, and I went back to Camp Chaffee, Arkansas. When I was in the reserve, that's where I went. Let's see. No, I've had two basic trainings. One was when I was 18, Camp Chaffee, Arkansas. The second when I was 22. So I went from Camp Chaffee, Arkansas, and I was then sent to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, because my highest score was administrative, and I learned how to type there, and I became a clerk. And really that helped me later on when I went to Vietnam. Otherwise, I would have been in the front lines.
Yeah, that's a safer place to be.
So when I was in the service, after that part of it, the Fort Leonard Wood, I had to leave to go home, and then I was sent overseas. I spent 2.5 years in France. I was a mail clerk in France for those 2.5 years, and then I came back to the States, and I reenlisted. Here's what happened. Okay, I purchased a car in France, and I really didn't know how I was going to pay for it. So a friend of mine asked me told me to request more time, and they did. They gave me 6 more months.
What kind of car was it?
Oh, it was a Volkswagen, mm-hmm. 1964 mm-hmm. Volkswagen. Well, I saved up enough money, and I shipped the car back to the States. But as far as the military part of which I didn't know, by me being a mail clerk, a division of troops had left Fort Carson, going to Fort Lewis, Washington, to go to Vietnam. And the military, they needed my MOS, or my title. They needed the mail clerks at Fort Carson to forward the mail. So my extension was cut short in France, and I was sent to Fort Carson, and there I reenlisted. I hadn't intended to make a career of the military, but I did. I put in 32 years.
Wow.
But while I was at Fort Carson, I met my future wife, and I was sent to Fort Bliss, and from Fort Bliss, I went to Vietnam.
How long were you there in Vietnam?
Well, let me put in this part. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was out on the what's called McGregor Range outside of mm-hmm. Fort Bliss. I was a clerk working with a missile unit, but. These guys, they were not needed in Vietnam at that time. So I was out of 80 guys, I was the only one who got orders to go to Vietnam. And nobody really knew where it was. My first sergeant went to a mail directory, and he found the APO, Army Postal Unit, was 96222, which was Saigon, Vietnam. okay, when I found out I was going, I it didn't really panic me. I've had a lot of experiences that it just kind of surreptitiously, and I took it in stride, and I left from, in fact, we had a two-week simulated training at the main base of Fort Bliss. It was jungle training. And I took it seriously, but in hindsight, you don't have jungle training on the desert.
No.
So that's my first punchline there.
And had you already met your wife?
I met her in Colorado Springs.
Okay.
And we got engaged. And then I left there and came to Fort Bliss. Mm-hmm. But we kept in touch. And then we didn't get married, but I was sent to Vietnam. And halfway through my tour, my brother was killed in a motorcycle accident. He just turned 21. He was coming from a party. And I think what happened between the train passing and the motorcycle noise, two horses mm-hmm. got out of a corral and he hit one of them. And I came back from Vietnam just for the funeral. And I got married to my wife and I went back. I could have gotten out of going back on the soul survivorship, but I didn't know much about that. And I've always been a team player, so I probably would have gone back anyway.
And how much more time did you have to stay before you
I had could... about six months. Six if months. I got there in November. And we had a kind of interesting thing happen. I was in General Westmoreland's headquarters. I was in Saigon. It was called MACV headquarters. Well, one day, General Westmoreland had a birthday, and they gathered us together, and we sang happy birthday to him. And another time, there was a small Viet Cong unit had infiltrated near the city of Saigon, and they set up a missile thing, but it failed to hit where we were, and it came down on some South Vietnamese soldiers. And I don't know how many, I didn't see the soldiers, but what we did learn, they didn't have a first aid kit in our area. So that was kind of a shocker, if you will.
So once you came back home after having lived in this environment, how was it acclimating to be back home?
Okay, well, I guess I was one of the lucky ones. What I mean by that, I did experience losing my brother, and I didn't get spat on or any of that sort of thing. When I came back in November, I spent Thanksgiving at home, and I had to report to Fort Riley, Kansas. I had about three more months to do in the service. So when I got to Fort Riley, the first part of December, I was administrative, but I was assigned to the housing unit at Fort Riley. But around December the 21st, one of my sergeants came to the barracks. He said, I need some volunteers. I didn't know what was going on, but just being myself, I raised my hand. They sent us to California. I escorted an 18-year-old soldier's body who was killed in Vietnam. And I met the family. He was from Topeka, Kansas. His name is Theodore Murray, Jr. And I met his family. His biological mother was in an institution. I didn't get to meet her. They were African American, but the father had remarried. He married a German lady, so I met that family, and they had a 3-year-old daughter. It took us a week to get the body buried because it was the holidays. They invited me to spend Christmas dinner with them, so I really did meet the family. So I did that, and then I reported back to my unit. I did experience something unusual. By the change of climate, flying to California and back, I suffered frostbite to my earlobes. I walked about three blocks to my job, and eventually my ears, they swollen, they bled. And the only thing I could relate that to, I had a stepdad who was in Korea, and he had frostbite on his feet. And I remember we were in Templeton. I remember in the summertime when we were barefoot. And not being facetious, but it looked like elephant hide.
Mm-hmm. Some trauma to the skin.
Yes, yes.
Do you have your phone on right now?
It's on mute.
Okay. So once you were back with your wife now, how much more time did you spend in the military?
Okay. I joined the National Guard after that. They had what they called a tri-one. I've always liked even numbers, so I did 5 in the reserves, 6 years regular Army, so that made 11. And the National Guard of New Mexico had a tri-one program. So I joined for that 1 year, and, well, you might say I got kind of, it was like a magnet for me. I stayed in. So I joined the National Guard. But as usual, I got into a field that I was not accustomed to. I was in a tanker unit. So I learned how to drive the tank.
How was that?
It was interesting. Partly because when I was a little kid, I had uncles who were mechanics, and they always chided me not to do anything mechanical. So I guess in the back of my brain, I'm saying, I'll show you.
Were you working on them?
No, I just drove them.
They're pretty tight in there.
Yes, and the ones that we had were out of Korea vintage. You could call an M48A1. That's what they use in Korea. And I was in the reserve for about 14 years. Oh, when I went from the reserve to regular Army, I was an E4, which is like a sergeant. Mm-hmm. Well, they took 2 stripes from me, and it bothered me even to this day. I'd earned something and had it taken away, but I kind of got over it. I made the rank of staff sergeant E6. I probably should have been a master sergeant, but I never dwelled on that.
Their justification was just to make the playing field even?
Yes,
is that what you said?
Yes, the thing was everything has to be equal, so I couldn't have anything on my sleeve.
For your second basic training.
Right. Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a burn.
Yes.
Some sand to swallow on that one.
So I was a mail clerk, a tanker. I've been a cook's helper. Here's an interesting story. When I was in the reserve part of it, I was sent to Fort Hood, Texas during my 6 month of training, and I was in, I think, the 32nd Engineer Company, but more than that, again, as I said, I was a cook's helper. I was a greenhorn. It was a company of 250 men, and they made me do the mashed potatoes. I had to make them from scratch. So we peeled the potatoes one day, me and a couple other guys, and we...
How many potatoes are we talking?
Well... I don't remember exactly, but we probably spent half a day peeling potatoes, and they put them in the cooler overnight. Mm-hmm. So the next day, this was back when you were churning the potatoes. I had a big old cauldron, and I used carnation milk, and so I was estimating it, but I was using what my mother had taught me at home about trying to cook. And even though I was a cook's helper, I do have a culinary skill, because my first job on Social Security was in a restaurant, and especially was making tuna fish sandwiches and onion rings. I don't eat onion rings anymore, by the way.
Yeah, you had your fill of that, I'm sure.
So that was my experience at Fort Hood, and making the mashed potatoes.
So after, I know that you at some point moved to Silver City.
Yes. When I was at Fort Camp Riley, my wife, she had become an X-ray technician, and she had applied in New Mexico for work whenever I got out of service. Well, Silver City, they needed her job specialty at the Hillcrest Hospital. Mm-hmm. And at the age of 21, well, what it was, the person who was in charge was an alcoholic, and they had to let him go. And my wife was hired there in that capacity. But as far as the Fort Riley experience for me, I was in the housing section, and when a division of troops came from Germany, we had to locate them in housing. But Dr. King was alive then, and he was speaking at Kansas University. I had a chance to go and see him. All I had to do was ask my supervisor, and I'm not trying to brag when I say this, but I stayed on my job. I didn't go, and I can't say I regret it. I did what my heart told me to do. They said duty comes first. But also another thing happened at Fort Riley. The the last of the cavalry horses, they say, died, and they had a ceremony for him. His name was Chief. Now, this was in 1968. I didn't really see the, you say, but that was one event that happened.
And, okay, so as far as Silver City, you moved there, and how long did you stay there?
I lived in Silver City for 10 years.
Oh.
So at that time, I'd never worked in the mines before, but felt as Kennicott has one company and Phelps Dodge had another one. Well, I had a family to support, and I was just going to work for the summer. But as it turned out, I stayed 10 years and 2 months on that job.
10 summers, yeah.
And also, I want to add, I'm a disabled veteran. I have a herniated disc in my back. But when it was first diagnosed, they said I had weak disc muscles. So I went through life with that in mind. And it was much later that I found out that I had the herniated disc. They did an MRI. But when I lived in Silver City, we had to go to El Paso to the VA. So there were times when I would get off of a graveyard shift, say at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I've had a 9 o'clock appointment in El Paso.
Wow.
And I drove there for that. And I had this one doctor, he put me on that medicine. It's a medicine now that it'll give you ibuprofen.
Okay.
I was on that for many years. And this doctor passed away, and I was still on ibuprofen. And I don't have a cancer, but they did a upper GI on me one time, and the doctor said I almost had cancer.
Wow. So were you, for the mines, were you driving?
No, I started as a laborer.
Mm-hmm.
Then I became a helper. I could have become an operator, but I wanted to go to college. So I was able to trade off shifts with another person, and I went to Western in Silver City for a couple of years. And then I came back to NMSU later on, but I don't know, being in and out of it, it's kind of rough being a full-time student.
It is, yeah. And you started a family there? And
Yes, we had two children. And I've lost both of my sons. My oldest son died of drugs about 11 years ago. We think he had a heart attack. But also, my son was not a violent person, but I saw a policeman tase my son 6 times. I was about 75 yards from the incident. He was going to see a doctor that morning. And that's what happened. But he died later on of, well, we'll say drugs. My other son committed suicide in a marriage. He was 21 years old. He was in New Orleans, Louisiana. I've had a nephew murdered at 28. And my older brother was 21.
You've suffered a lot of loss in your life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Your wife, how long were you married?
We were married for 10 years. She's now in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We hear from each other occasionally. She called me not too long ago to wish me happy birthday. In fact, as I understand, she went on to be in nuclear medicine after we separated. She earned a brown belt in judo. She's very, very intelligent. And my oldest son, if you think I'm smart, he was a genius. He could talk to you about anything. And my other son was in the retail business.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So now that you're out of the military, what do you feel is something you've learned from being in the military, something that...
I learned about myself that I had learned how to persevere. Yes, I have personal memories of losing the rank and other things. I suffered some... Well, I experienced discrimination. I witnessed a race riot in Germany, or in France, rather. There had been a cross burning in Germany in the 60s. When I was in the National Guard in Colorado, one time I was assigned to in charge of an ammo detail, but I had to stay back at the base for a while doing something, and two of the men who were assigned to me, they were mature soldiers. I found out that both of them went to the latrine when they were supposed to have been watching the ammunition, and my first sergeant wanted to court-martial me because I was in charge. And I probably would have stayed longer in the National Guard, but I was eventually gotten out. But I had enough time to retire. I put in 32 years, as I said. I went from the age of 17 to about 58 or so years old. I don't regret any of it. I joined as a youngster, and I got out as an oldster.
So when you left Silver City and then you came back to Las Cruces, is that accurate?
No, what happened, I took on another family. And then I lost my job in the mines. After 10 years, I was terminated, and I was so devastated, we moved to Las Vegas, Nevada. Mm-hmm. And I lived there for 10 years. And I got divorced from that family, and my mother was living in Las Cruces. So I came back to Las Cruces to live, and I've been here ever since. I lost my mother to pancreatic cancer. She was 82 in 1997. I've been bitten by a pit bull dog in 94. I almost drowned in the Rio Grande River swimming. I got caught at the edge of a whirlpool and some people pulled me out. And I've stepped on a baby rattlesnake when I was working in Radium Spring in a greenhouse. But when I was a kid in Louisiana, it was one summer and I had on shoes and some shorts. I put my foot in a rubber boot. It had a snake in it. I didn't know what it was. I felt something squirming and I told my dad, he said, kick off the boot, and it turned out to be a snake. And from that experience, it was helpful to me because little did I know I would be confronted with things of that nature later on in life.
Always check your boots, I guess.
Pun intended.
Yeah. So your mom, did she stay in the home off Mesquita? I know you said you grew up on Mesquita Street.
Yes, I grew up off 412 Juniper Avenue. Mm-hmm. It is an offshoot of Mesquite. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting, I've been in an integrated environment all my life, even in Louisiana. We were the only black family in this Mexican neighborhood. But I learned to speak Spanish, not only with the kids. We had to have a unit of foreign language in school. So when I was in, I guess, fourth grade, I think it was, this Hispanic lady would come from Lucero School to teach us Spanish, and then she would go back to her school. But I learned Spanish. I can say greetings in about 10 languages.
Can you think of them now?
Yes. Polish, Jan Dobre, Japanese, Kankadeska, Korean, Annyeonghaseyo, Navajo, Yatahe, Vietnamese, Chao Ko Mandioi, Chao Ba Mandioi, Chao Om Mandioi, German, Guten Morgen, French, bonjour, Russian, privet, just to name a few. I also worked at a Rexall drugstore in Las Cruces when I was in high school, and that was an interesting experience as well. I worked there for 2 years. I went to all-state course in high school. I was class treasurer for about 3 years, and we only had about 300 students in our class, but I remember the second time that I was going to run for treasurer, we each had to give a campaign speech. And ironically, as always in my case, I'm always the last one. About the time I was going to give my speech, the bell rang to end the assembly, but they elected me anyway.
You missed your opportunity. Well,
yes,
for your speech.
I spent 2 hours working on a speech to use 2 minutes to give it.
Oh. So, did you have any other family here? I know you had a sister. She lived back.
Yes. I have a sister here. Her name is Joanne. She worked for the county of Doniana for almost 30 years. I have a niece named Janice Jones. She worked 27 years with the city. She's now working with the Memorial Hospital. Mm-hmm. And I have a nephew. He lives in Arizona. I think he's trying to get into the media or music, as it were.
Mm-hmm. So now, you know, we met in the post office, and I'm from Las Cruces. I can't seem to get out of this place either. But what's something that you really admire about Las Cruces?
You could say I'm like a juniper tree, if you will. It doesn't need a lot of water. It could stand the summer, the change of climate. And I'm in the land of enchantment.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's a good one. So now, what do you like to do on your time off when you're here other than chat with folks?
Well, funny that you would ask me that. Mm-hmm. My hobby is meeting people.
Well, you're a professional. Definitely. You have a great gift for that.
Merci, madame. Merci beaucoup.
When did you realize that you had this kind of gift?
I've been talking to people since I was 7 years old. Mm-hmm. I performed at Booker T. Washington School. I sang, I said speeches. And one time we had what they call turnabout. The boys dressed as girls. And my name is Harold. They named me Harolina the Ballerina. And they made a tutu for me.
Oh, my goodness. I would have loved to have seen the picture of that. All right. Well, I just want to thank you, Harold, for taking the time to come here and share your stories with me. And I just want to thank you for bringing such light into people's lives with your stories.
Il pas de quoi. No hay de qué. And you're welcome.
I look forward to seeing you at the post office again.